Today is Monday, March 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, calling it unprecedented, the chief U.S. health official says the country could see up to 200,000 deaths from the coronavirus.
This is something that we have never seen before.
The International Monetary Fund officially declares a global recession. Also ahead, a beloved country artist has died. It's all on today's International Edition. The U.S. now has the highest number of cases of the coronavirus, with the death toll more than 2,300 so far. Close to half of those fatalities are in New York State. Worldwide, more than 33,000 people have died, half of them in Spain and Italy. The top infectious disease expert in the U.S., Dr. Anthony Fauci, said Sunday that the U.S. could see 100 to 200,000 deaths in the country and millions could become infected. Fauci says this one-month anniversary of the first COVID-19 death in the U.S. also reminds him of the struggle to suppress the AIDS epidemic.
Cumulatively, if you look at what's happened with HIV/AIDS over the 37 and a half, 38 years that we've had it, the burden and the suffering and the death has been enormous, historic. But it came over a period of time. There was the fright in the beginning. What we're seeing now in actual real time is something that's unprecedented. This is something that we have never seen before.
President Trump, meanwhile, on Sunday accused hospitals of hoarding ventilators that are in scarce supply across the United States.
We have some healthcare workers, some hospitals, frankly, individual hospitals and hospital chains. We have them hoarding equipment, including ventilators. We have to release those ventilators, especially hospitals that are never going to use them. They have to release them.
Trump, whose critics have accused him of trying to deflect blame over his handling of the crisis, did not cite any evidence to back his accusations that hospitals are hoarding the devices. It was also unclear which medical facilities he was referring to. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump is extending the voluntary national shutdown as sickness and death from the coronavirus pandemic rise in the U.S.
The modeling estimates that the peak in death rate is likely to hit in 2 weeks. So I'll say it again, the peak, the highest point of death rate, remember this, is likely to hit in 2 weeks. Nothing would be worse than declaring victory before the victory is won. That would be the greatest loss of all. Therefore, the next 2 weeks and during this period, it's very important that everyone strongly follow the guidelines, have to follow the guidelines that our great Vice President holds up a lot. He's holding that up a lot. He believes in it so strongly. The better you do, the faster this whole nightmare will end. Therefore, we will be extending our guidelines to April 30th to slow the spread. On Tuesday, we will be finalizing these plans and providing a summary of our findings, supporting data, and strategy to the American people.
The initial 15 days of social distancing urged by the federal government is expiring, and Trump had expressed interest in relaxing the guidelines, at least in parts of the country less afflicted by the pandemic, but instead he decided to extend them. The federal guidelines recommend against large group gatherings, promote social distancing, and urge older people and anyone with existing health problems to stay home. The coronavirus has prompted at least 81 countries so far to inquire about emergency help from the International Monetary Fund. IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva said in a news conference that the virus has already driven the global economy into recession.
It is now clear that we have entered a recession as bad or worse than in 2009.
But unlike the slow recovery from the 2008-2009 global financial crisis, she said there may be a sizable rebound in 2021, but said for now countries must respond with very massive spending to avoid a cascade of bankruptcies and emerging market debt defaults. Experts are calling for massive international aid for Africa to weather the economic and public health fallout of the virus. The pandemic, some say, is also a wake-up call for African governments to realize long-needed reforms. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA.
A number of African economies are among the world's fastest growing in recent years. However, analysts fear COVID-19, which was slow to arrive on the continent, will end that. The United Nations Economic Commission for Africa estimates the coronavirus has already cost the region $29 billion and could more than half its GDP for reasons including supply chain disruptions. Here's ECA Director for Eastern Africa, Mama Keita, on CNBC Africa.
You have several other losses that are linked to that. The slowing down of the activities comes with reduced public revenue for the government. It comes with reduced profitability for businesses, lowered investment.
Also lost jobs and revenues on a continent where many live on the edge. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is asking G20 leaders for $150 billion in emergency funding for Africa, describing the virus as an existential threat to its economies. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed for an initial $2 billion in international aid for the immediate health needs of the world's most vulnerable countries. Many are African. He noted the sum is a fraction of the massive coronavirus rescue packages richer nations are putting together for themselves.
No African government has the financial means to engage in such programs to protect their economies. Moreover, there is a concern that developed countries, the richest countries, have less and less financial means to help Africa.
Laurent Bossard heads the Sahel and West Africa Club of the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Because of the African economy still relies too much, too heavily on the exports of raw material, the impact of the global crisis will be a disaster, I think, for the continent.
Africa's tourism sector will likely be hard hit by the crisis, so too foreign investment and trade. Oil-exporting countries such as Nigeria, Algeria, and Angola are already reeling from plummeting crude prices. Experts say other key African exports such as cocoa, rubber, and timber will also be affected.
This crisis should be for the African countries, the African governments, the occasion to engage in proactive policies of economic diversification. They cannot afford to keep so dependent of raw material exports.
However, Bossard and others say the outside world must step up, not just with humanitarian aid, but with broader support for African economies. How the continent deals with the pandemic is not just an African problem, they say, but will also affect how the world recovers from the health and economic consequences of COVID-19. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Australia has also announced a multi-million dollar measure to boost mental health and emergency food services during the COVID-19 crisis. The government says it will also announce a third major economic stimulus package to protect businesses and jobs. As of March 29th, there were more than 3,800 confirmed COVID-19 cases in Australia, and 16 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has that.
More than a million Australians could lose their jobs as the COVID-19 crisis intensifies, which would more than double the national unemployment rate. Airlines and travel agents of this week laid off thousands of people. The ripples are spreading to all corners of the economy, from cafes to hairdressers and factories to theatres. Retailers are hit hard, while lawyers, dance teachers and tradesmen are also feeling the financial strain. Few professions are immune from the economic calamity unleashed in Australia by COVID-19. The government in Canberra has already announced unprecedented financial support for businesses that are struggling to survive. More measures to stimulate the economy are expected in coming days. Millions of dollars are to be given to mental health centres and emergency food programmes as the crisis deepens. Many fired workers in Australia are unemployed for the first time and are joining long lines outside the government Centrelink welfare offices. Among them is Chris Desmond.
It's horrible, actually, to be quite honest. I mean, I'm nearly 60 and I've never been unemployed in my life, ever. And I've put myself through courses and worked at the same time, had children and never, ever been unemployed. And this is my very first visit to a Centrelink office. And I'm devastated, but I'm sure there's people in a lot worse situation than I'm in. We have four adults in our family and three of us are unemployed as of this week.
While much of the economy is in distress, some sectors will flourish during the coronavirus pandemic. Supermarkets in Australia are recruiting thousands of extra workers to cope with a surge in demand. But overall, the economy is sinking. Australia hasn't been in recession since the early 1990s. But with much of the country grinding to a halt, experts warn that a steep economic downturn is inevitable. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Here are some of the other top stories we are keeping an eye on at VOA. France used two high-speed trains and a German military plane to move more than three dozen critically ill coronavirus cases Sunday to ease the pressure on overwhelmed hospitals in eastern France. The Grand Est region was the first in France to be hit by a wave of coronavirus infections that has rapidly moved westward to engulf the greater Paris region, where hospitals are desperately adding intensive care beds to cope with the influx. A gun rights group is cheering the Trump administration's designation of the firearms industry, including retailers, as part of the nation's critical infrastructure during the coronavirus emergency. The designation by the Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is an advisory and does not override determinations by individual jurisdictions. And in Libya, artillery blasts shook the capital of Tripoli Sunday as fighting raged, even as the nation confirmed five more cases of the coronavirus for a total of eight. The National Center for Disease Control said the new cases were in the northwestern city of Misrata, held by the government or National Accord, which is at war with the Libyan National Army. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. Army National Guard has been deployed to assist in coronavirus efforts. They are being tasked with quickly setting up temporary hospitals, among other major efforts. Joining us to talk about what specifically this all means for the U.S.'s efforts to deal with the pandemic is VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Carla, thank you for being with us. First of all, tell us about what the Guard is doing now that they've officially been deployed, including building makeshift hospitals.
Yes. So what they have done in New York is they have gone into this big convention center, the Javits Convention Center, and they have set up several hospital spaces. We were hearing from the commander of the Army National Guard, and he said that by Monday, they are hoping to have 2,000 plus hospital spaces. They had initially planned to have about 1,000, and then they found a way to expand upon that. And this is important because this will be areas where they can actually bring in coronavirus patients to be treated by medical nurses and doctors. And everywhere where they're running out of bed, they were worried about filling these spaces. And so this Army National Guard space is now filling that need, because the governor of New York has said that what they have is they have 53,000 spaces for hospital beds in the state of New York, and what they need to be at is 140,000 in just a few days. So New York has desperately been looking for these hospital spaces, and within the Javits Center, that has been a crucial, crucial space for New York. In fact, so much so that the governor of New York is actually asking them to build four more spaces like this in the coming days.
Wow. And the Army National Guard, how are they different from the actual Army, U.S. Army?
What's unique about the National Guard is that They serve the community, and then they also will come in during domestic emergencies like this coronavirus pandemic. They will occasionally serve overseas combat missions. They can help with counter-drug efforts. They do all different sorts of things on temporary basis. So whereas if you are an active duty Army or Navy or Air Force or Marine, if you're in that group, you are constantly being a soldier, sailor, airman, or Marine. You don't have another job in your community. The National Guard, they work as medics, they'll work as firefighters, they'll work as teachers. They have all different jobs, but when they're called upon to come up and help in these domestic emergencies and sometimes overseas emergencies, then they answer the call and they come out. So a huge force, there's over 100,000 of them, about 150,000 strong of this guard, and they have been activated all across the country right now. There are about 15,000 that are currently helping this coronavirus pandemic response, and they're doing everything from building medical areas for potentially to come in and have some patients. They are also helping test some patients. They are checking patients for symptoms, and they're doing something as small but as very important as disinfecting areas so people can continue to use them and carry valuable supplies when needed. So a large range of what the National Guard is doing, but however small, they're all equally important jobs in the big scheme of this. Because think about it, if there's not enough people to drive a truck to deliver meals to these elderly that can't get food, then they won't be able to get food. And that's, to that elderly person, that really means as much as if they need to go to a hospital if they get sick.
And speaking of hospitals, we know that one massive hospital ship with about 1,000 beds has already docked in California, and now another one expected later today in New York. Can you just briefly tell us what they will be used for?
Yes. So these are the Navy's power when it comes to helping in crisis. With any medical crisis, the Navy can send out these two hospital ships. And so, like you said, there's the USNS Mercy that is docked in LA, and they will be taking up to 1,000 patients, which will be freeing up to 1,000 beds. And then as of Monday, the Comfort will be in New York to take in 1,000 patients to free up to 1,000 beds. Now, it's very important here. So when we were talking about the National Guard, we were talking about the Javits Center being a place where coronavirus patients could come and they could be isolated. That cannot happen on these hospital ships. These hospital ships are built for trauma because they're built to go out and help in a war zone scenario, to go out and be available. So they're not really built for infectious diseases, and they don't have the sections and the compartments sectioned off like you need in an infectious disease outbreak. So what they're going to be doing is they're going to be screening patients very diligently to make sure that there are no coronavirus patients on these hospital ships. But they're very important. A lot of people are.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. The sweeping economic emergency bill that President Donald Trump signed last week will help better equip healthcare systems and help with food deliveries. Tribes had been lobbying Congress to help address shortfalls in an already underfunded healthcare system and to ensure the federal government fulfills its obligation to them under the treaties and other acts. Native American tribes in the U.S. fear the COVID-19 outbreak could have a devastating effect on them. Many have little access to hospitals with intensive care units and ventilators. And adding to the threat, the traditional communal lifestyles practiced by many tribes make social distancing, quarantine, and self-isolation especially difficult. VOA's Jason Patinkin talked about the challenges with Brian Newland, tribal chair of the Bay Mills Reservation of the Sioux Tribe of Chippewa Indians in Michigan, who says the virus threatens the very existence of some of these indigenous cultures.
One of the big challenges we face is that culturally we lead very communal lifestyles. So we have a lot of homes where multiple generations of family members live together, a lot of informal care networks in our communities where everybody takes care of everybody else. So if you tell people, don't ask grandmother or your aunt to watch your kid, that's unusual and it makes it hard for you to shelter in place. Or if you have an adult sibling or a neighbor who relies on you for a meal once a week or just to check in and make sure they're okay, and you take that away from somebody, it makes it hard for them to live their daily lives. So when you have folks who rely upon those community care networks, and you layer on top of that a cultural way of life that is built around being together, it makes you especially vulnerable to the spread of infectious disease.
What about in terms of the healthcare aspect?
In our community, we have a pretty well-developed tribal healthcare system and health center, but it's what we call a primary care facility. We don't have intensive care units on our reservation. We don't have ventilators, and we have actually very few test kits for the coronavirus or other protective equipment for the healthcare workers. The nearest hospital is 25 miles away in a city on the border with Canada, and they have very few beds in general, very few intensive care unit beds, and then even fewer ventilators. And so if you have people in our community who get sick, they're going to be transported 25 miles away, competing with others off the reservation for those types of resources. Now, there are a lot of tribal communities in the United States that are even more rural and remote than we are. And in some places, they might be 100 miles from a hospital with intensive care units and ventilators. People in those communities often have very few resources to make those trips on their own. Very few tribal communities have access to the type of care you would need if you contracted the coronavirus.
Are the needs of tribal nations in the United States being listened to in the discussions? Are they even in the discussions at the federal level?
Not on a consistent basis. There are, of course, members of Congress who take tribal issues very seriously, either because they're members of tribes themselves or represent tribes or just have an awareness of federal government's obligation. But if you look across the U.S. government, Indian tribes and Indian affairs and Indian healthcare often go at the bottom of the list when it comes to budget priorities.
What are the things that you think tribal nations really need the most from the federal government right now?
Well, it's going to vary from tribe to tribe, because some tribes have a lot of resources and other tribes have very little resources. With my tribe and with our community here, our most important need right now is having the ability to test our tribal members, because if we can test folks on a broad scale, that will allow us to isolate those who are sick and then trace the folks that they've been in contact with and quarantine them to keep it from spreading in our community.
With any community on Earth, a disease that seems to target the elderly is vicious. But particularly for tribes, I think it's even more so because of the knowledge, the history, the culture, the language that resides in those elderly individuals. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head, because for a lot of tribes, the ability to speak our languages fluently has diminished over the years because of federal government policies and education policies. Indian children were basically told, you are not allowed to speak your language or you'll be punished. So the people who have the ability to pass that knowledge on are the most vulnerable from the coronavirus. In some tribal communities, there may only be two or three people who have that ability to speak their language fluently. Losing that connection with your culture would be devastating to your very existence, our very existence as Indigenous people.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Border crossings. Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Besides the serious healthcare impacts of the coronavirus pandemic, it's also been a struggle for many in the population who are staying home and potentially isolated. Joining us is Rabbi Aaron Glatt, who's also an infectious disease physician in New York. But let's talk about the spiritual side of your job, doctor. What do you say to people who are really struggling with the emotional aspects, this change in their lives, the uncertainty, lack of human contact, they're fearful and just having difficulty in general with the isolation?
It's a great question. I think this is a challenge for all of us, and it's a challenge that we can actually use to improve ourselves, to make us better people, to grow, so to say, both in a plain sort of way, in a spiritual sort of a way for every person on their own level. This is a chance for us to be kinder to other people. If you know of a shut-in, if you know of an older person, give them a call. Maybe you wouldn't have done it otherwise. You can't stop in, but you can make sure you let them know that they're not alone. You can make sure that you let them know that you'll help them take care of whatever needs they have. If they need somebody to go shopping for them, wow, you're going out anyway, or somebody's delivering anyway. This is a chance for each of us to be kinder to everybody else, to show our humanity. And as we're being forced in some way to decrease our closeness with other people, maybe it's an opportunity for us to rekindle a relationship with older people that are sometimes ignored and left out. And everybody needs to make that effort to your own community, certainly to your own family, and in any way you can. Everybody should go to their mosque, their church, their temple, and say, hey, how can I help in this struggle? I'm not going to work now, but what can I do to help somebody else? I may be fortunate enough to be home and safe and have the ability to help somebody else. This is a challenge that every one of us can hopefully rise to and make life a little bit easier on somebody that's maybe going through a very difficult time.
People are scared. Even people that are not elderly are scared. No one knows what they may have touched, what they may have, who they may have been in contact they didn't realize. Are they?
It's just a great chance for people to reach out to shut-ins, to people that are alone, to people that are terrified, whatever the age. Right. And again, it's a chance for us to be closer to other people, even as we're physically distancing ourselves from them.
That's Rabbi Aaron Glatt, who was also a physician in New York. Oprah Winfrey is working at home because of the new coronavirus and says she is playing it as safe as she possibly can. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The media mogul says she's not taking any chances when it comes to the virus. Oprah Winfrey is 66 years old in the risk group and says she's practicing social distancing even at her home, where she says nobody goes out and nobody comes in. That means longtime boyfriend Stedman Graham has had to stay in the guest house. Oprah said he'd recently been on a plane, so she put him on lockdown. She posted a video earlier this week of talking to him through a window. Oprah says she's working via Zoom and used Facebook to interview actor Idris Elba for her COVID-19 show on Apple TV. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And finally, country singer Joe Diffie, who had a string of hits in the 1990s with chart-topping rock-tinged singles such as Home and Pickup Man, has died after testing positive for COVID-19. He was 61.
She tried to pay me with a kiss and I began to understand there's something women like about a pickup man.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Gagne, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day. Take care and be well.
Haven't said, I never knew you were a pickup man. You can set my truck on fire and roll it down a hill, and I still would.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McKinney.